This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Bill Ryder with you. Good to be back here on the airwaves, as always. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Wasn't here yesterday, and by now, you've almost certainly heard the news. The tragic, the awful, I don't have the words, passing of Terrez Paylor, national NFL writer, and one of my closest friends. So we'll, if I can get through it, which I'm having trouble doing right now, I will do my best to honor him in a few minutes here. We'll do some sports too, some NBA power rankings. Tom Haberstroh will be on the show. We'll get into how Tom Brady has broken psychologically, not just the NFL and our perceptions of reality, but the psyches of the otherwise strongest psychological quarterbacks in the National Football League. We'll do buy or sell. As always, 855-212-4CBS, Twitter Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Again, a few minutes from now, I'm going to talk about Terrez. I don't know if I can do that. And if I can't, then I can't. And you'll hear me blubber and struggle the way that I have the last, I guess now, 48 hours. But I do want to start, odd though I suppose the comparison is, or the tone is, look, I don't know about you. I need funny stuff in my life. That's been true for a year. It's been more true, certainly, than it ever has in my life the last 48 hours. I found myself, after I got the news about Terrez, you know, on top of talking with his loved ones and just my loved ones and sending people notes that I love them, and being really angry and really sad, needing to laugh. So I must have watched that Tom Brady Gronk T-Mobile commercial, I kid you not, 50 times. And it pained me how much I liked Tom Brady in that moment. And little did I know he was just getting started. I can forgive Tom Brady a lot of things. I can forgive him dominating the National Football League. I can forgive him destroying my perspective on Bill Belichick. I can forgive him tricking me and people like me into writing a column 10 years ago. He was probably finished. I can forgive him destroying psychologically and emotionally Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and maybe Patrick Mahomes. I don't even know anymore. I don't know if I can forgive him being one of the guys that you know, came to my, you know, was a source of solace in a really tough time by getting crazy drunk and being the most likable guy on earth. I mean, can you just for a minute, Tom, stop it? Has to be a simulation. And it's weird because, and I'm pretty honest about my life, I like to drink. I'm not afraid, when appropriate, when the kiddos are sleeping, to have a couple drinks. But there's nothing really likable about public intoxication. I can speak from personal experience that it more often leads to apologies or embarrassment than anything else. Only Brady, in celebrating, I think it's a 7th ring, but if somebody told me it was his 30th, I would just nod my head and be like, sounds good to me. A boat parade in which he's so drunk that he basically can't stand, and it's the reaction to all of us is, man, I hate that guy, and I think I like that guy. Good for him. The question's everywhere, and I'm not the first to it today, and I won't be the last. Is Tom Brady likable? Yes, which makes me hate him even more than I used to. These clips are short, but I want to play him for you, because if you, I don't know how much you actually have to strive here to hear the slur and the drunkenness. But this is the deserved end game for the moment. There's probably more championships coming for a 43-year-old quarterback who, to his credit, has fought through every doubter and every critic, including people in his own building in New England. I mean, the irony is enough to slap you in the face and wake you up at 4:30 in the morning like my poor wife had to today. She had to get up and do some chores. She was like, well, this is what time you wake up? Yeah, babe, it is. Either go outside in the cool air or just focus on Tom Brady's career. And the fact that in New England, where the Patriots way was all of us internally drowning out the noise so we can have perspective, they couldn't have perspective on this dude's greatness. So he said, deuces, see ya. I'm going to Tampa Bay. The simulation continues there. So here is Brady with a very short, but I think Citizen Kane level insight and intellectualism on the comparisons between a drunken championship Tampa Bay boat parade and the duck boats of Boston.
First boat parade in your career?
Yeah. There were duck boats before, but it was freezing cold. There was nothing like this.
There you go.
80 degrees.
Tampa Bay way.
This
here,
is
right.
Perfect.
Perfect weather.
And we had a nice
weather
day.
Yeah. the duck boats. As a person who has a couple times early in his career, and never at CBS Sports Radio, which is true, forgotten he has agreed to radio hits at like midnight with friends and has been out drinking with other friends, I know the, yeah, the Lakers are pretty good. I know what that sounds like, as do producers who tend to cut you off. Here, too, again, you can hear the drunkenness from Brady, is his very studied, almost Patriots way, I want to say sober, but it's too on the nose, rendering of just how cool that parade was.
This is amazing. So I'm loving it. So happy for our team. Everyone get to experience this. This is a very cool day.
It's amazing. I just fell over. What can I say? Good for that guy. I mean, only Brady could make himself that likable at the end. And I'll say this too about Brady before I get into Trez. I don't know what it is about Brady that I don't like. I was thinking about this really before the Super Bowl and certainly since he won it. You could point to Deflategate, but even if that's a real thing, and I thought it was in the moment, I also thought it was a temporary thing. A guy that, and I think this comparison probably is too aggressive, too critical of Brady, but it's the one that I have. I think a player that corks his bat once has been caught, back when that was a thing, right, when you didn't just do it to your body, was caught corking his bat, but I don't think it necessarily, it's situational, extends to the history of that player. Just like I think the Patriots stealing plays and signs, if that happened, and it may have, does not, I think, speak to success post that 10-year drought when the clamps really came on. So I guess the Deflategate could play a role in that. I suppose the fact that it's the Patriots and any fan base that is inundated and really bathes in this rare luxury of that kind of continued success becomes obnoxious. I don't know what's going to become of the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, but if they win, I don't know, 3 of the next 6, or they win 0 of the next 6 and then win 5 in 7 years, it may, the joy of watching them play may wear off. I think just personally, as I tried to evaluate what I don't like about Tom Brady or didn't, I'm a media member. And as much as I like, ironically, you know, paradoxically, I like Bill Belichick and my interactions with him, which were limited, but you know, long, a couple hours, meaningful. I don't like it when people tee up the media writ large as the enemy. I just, you know, that's what I do for a living. And having been on the inside of that, I'm sure if you're a police officer or you're a teacher or whatever you are, right, and you've been writ large about something, a military member, whatever, member of a particular political party, you don't love it, right? You feel like you're part of a nuanced group and the sins of the few don't mark the sins, you know, don't mark everyone as a sinner. I get that. So maybe that's an explanation. But I think I just realized in watching Brady stumble off that boat and watching that T-Mobile commercial and trying to weirdly process my grief by trying to find a way to laugh, that it's hard to celebrate winners. It is hard to celebrate winners, which was one of the really rare things about Trez Paylor. That very few people I've known in a very cutthroat business have had that kind of success. And his was limited. I mean, he did not, if I'm just going to be honest, and I'm not criticizing an individual, that was a guy at the Kansas City Star who, to my mind, it is what it is, but I used to talk to Trez about it, and he would just laugh, be like, it's no big deal. I don't think he got the opportunities as quickly as he deserved because it's a competitive business. People make choices. No criticism of any individuals. But he wasn't bitter about it in a way that I certainly would have been, in a way that other people were. And so there was a decency and a greatness that didn't need to be an exhibitionist, which is rare. And I don't know if I owe you an apology, but one of the things I try to live by on this show is I tell the truth. And I'm not big on concealment in my life. By the way, to the great chagrin of the people that I love sometimes and the people that I hate, I'm just going to talk about my life. Now, I wasn't in yesterday, which is a great credit to Mark Chernoff and David Marinick, who decided that I wouldn't work. I would have worked. And I'm glad that I had that time to deal with what I'm feeling. Because Trez was one of my absolute closest friends. I love the guy. And I did know on Tuesday, as I talked to you for 2 hours, that he had passed. And I apologize that I would rather honor him with my words rather than grieve publicly. So I'm going to try to do that. But a couple hours before the radio show, I had woken about 4:30 in the morning to a text message from his fiance, Ebony, who's also one of my oldest and dearest friends. In fact, I've known Ebony since high school. We went to college together. And I had the great pleasure, actually, to set them up. And the text was, please call me. It's urgent. It's about Therese. And so I knew. I thought I knew. I mean, it's 4:30 in the morning. I'm 43. Therese was 37. I've never lost anyone that young that I'm that close to. And so I made the decision, and I talked to Therese's dad before the show as well, who obviously was grieving, not to talk about it on the air, which I've never done. I just, it didn't seem my place to share that news. So I apologized for 2 hours of radio, in which I tried. I don't know what the right reaction was, to sound upbeat and do a show. And it just... It's interesting doing that show, knowing my friend was gone and not being able to talk about it, choosing not to talk about it, made me realize how lucky I am to do this. And I mean this, to come into your world, that I get to share whatever the hell I want. I get to talk about whatever I want for however long they let me. And I suppose now you think you understand things emotionally, right? You think you understand things. You try, or at least I try, to have empathy for people. And I've tried that in the last year. I have. I've seen the suffering of people who have lost people to COVID, and not just COVID, what's been a really hard year for a lot of people. But now, for those of you that have lost folks in the last year to COVID or otherwise, I understand. I wish I didn't. And to those of you that have been struggling, right, just stuck in your houses, and I'm a pretty joyous guy. I get it. And if I can get through this, I just want to say a few things about Therese, because and I may not be able to get through it, but I'm going to try. And 855-212-4CBS, if you want to call in. I mean, I think when he was on the show last Friday, I think probably you could tell that, look, like Tom Havers was on the show later, and he's great. And Sam Amick's on the show sometimes, and Howard Beck. And those are buddies, right? Or friend, whatever you want to call. Therese and I were something else. That was a real and fairly deep friendship. And he was such an interesting guy, because he had a public job and was a very private dude. And to me, he reflected, as very few media members do, and again, not painting everybody with this brush, I've had a lot of success, and I feel like I deserve it. I don't deserve it on the level that Therese did. And that's true of most people. I don't think, and I mean this, and I've said this for the last 3 or 4 years about him, I don't think there was a more successful sports writer in America outside of maybe Adrian Wojnarowski, with all respect to Woj. And we've seen that from Adrian because of the success that he's had. He's dominated that sport. Therese would have had he been allowed to live longer, had he lived longer. He was 37, as I said. And one of the things that I thought was amazing about him in a tough business was his perseverance. A lot of us, myself included, aren't patient in our desire to get what we think are our opportunities, because we don't know that they're going to come again. Because we recognize, as good as we think we are, as we don't, that it may go away. And Therese knew. I can remember sitting at the Caddy Shack in Kansas City, Missouri, great dive bar, drinking PBRs. He had this amazing laugh. And talking about, and look, I'm a pretty obnoxiously candid person. It can be charming, I'm told, but it cannot be. and just tell him, like, you deserve better. Like, you should be. He's like, no, it'll work out. And he did high schools for a long time at the Star. Had no attitude about that. I would have. And he did, I think, soccer. And he did the University of Missouri beat. And he finally got to the NFL beat. And he, damn, he dominate that thing. And I could talk to you all day about his excellence as a reporter, the stories he broke, his Nostradamus prediction on this show that Patrick Mahomes was going to be Patrick Mahomes, the fact that he rose overnight to being the go-to guy for Jim Rome, who I was just told honored Trez for an hour yesterday. God, I love Jim Rome as a guy. What a great dude. I haven't been able to be honest, to read much of the things written about Trez or write anything. This is the first conversation I've been able to have without totally breaking down. So the sports writer that he was, amazing. And the reflection of what sports are at their best, because this guy is a thing that I talk about and praise, but I could never be. I have been lucky in my career. And I'm not being falsely humble. I think I'm pretty good at the things I do. There's 100 guys like me. Maybe there aren't 10,000, but there's 100. And I got lucky. There was one of Trez as a talent, as a football mind, as a guy that just grinded. And what's amazing about him, and this isn't always true, is the person that he was. Ebony, who his fiance, God, Ebony, if you're not listening, I love you, and I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I've known Ebony since high school. And we went to college together. And I'll never forget. And look, we all have trouble in love, right? We're all looking for someone who's the right person for us. I found mine early. Got lucky. And so, you know, Ebony had, like we all did, had some bad luck with boyfriends. To be fair, I was the bad luck for girlfriends. So let's not pretend I was a victim. I apologize to all of you that should never have dated me. And when you did, I'm sorry. And Ebony would call me every couple years. She lived in Boston, excellent journalist. And she would tell me, you know, like you do with some of your closest friends. I had this terrible experience with a guy and I need a good guy. And she called me and she doesn't remember this. She called me and said, I need a good guy. I need a good guy. And I go, this is years ago. I go, I got the guy. Met him in the last couple of years, like pretty good friends. One great guy, Trez Paler. You know, you're both from Detroit. She's like, how old is he? Well, he's this, a little bit younger. Not a lot younger. She's like, he's in Kansas City. I'm in Boston. Nah, I'm good. So whatever. She went on with her life. Trez and I became even better friends. Ebby and I are great friends. She calls me. She doesn't remember the first part of this. She calls me 3 years later. I'm at the San Francisco airport. And those of you that have sisters, I have a sister. Happy birthday, Catherine. And or relationships like I have with Ebony where it's like a sister. No, you don't put men in the lives of the women you care about unless you are sure. Because, dude, you know, right? Like, even the good guys aren't good guys sometimes. Tough lesson that I'm going to have to sort of teach my daughter. And so I hope that it underscores the weight of this conversation. I'm at the San Francisco airport. I'm not trying to share your private business a lot. I hope you understand this is honor of your love for Trez, his love for you. And Trez, she had a really tough breakup. She had really just like a bad guy, right? Bad guy posing as a good guy. Happens. It's not fair. It happens. And I brought up Trez again. And she didn't remember this from 3 years. I go, look. And I knew Trez a lot better at this point. Probably been 3 or 4 years. I go, look. This is, and I mean this, and I mean it now, and I meant it then. This is the best person I know. This is the best human being that I know. And she said, okay, what the hell? Connect us. She was in Boston, he was in Kansas City. And I apologize for the emotion. Just from sheer coincidence, you know, God looking down, I think, Trez was going to Boston for a game. And what they found, it deserved a lot more time. But it was a beautiful thing because he really was, you know, maybe outside of my father, along with my father, the best person I've ever known. When the Chiefs put out a statement in their mourning yesterday, 2 days ago, and the Saints put out a statement, and you read these tributes, I promise you it's all real. Trez, I love you, buddy. And we'll come back next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. We're just talking about Trez Paylor. That was not an easy radio segment to do. I got to tell you, I'm not ashamed of crying. I'm not ashamed of my emotions. It is what it is. I mean, God help me. I cry at stupid commercial. I can certainly get emotional at something that's difficult. You just feel like grief is a private thing, right? And ironically, I don't know if it's irony, Trez was such a private guy and such a great guy. He was. He just was. He deserves to be honored publicly, and I don't know how he'd feel about it, right? It's an interesting thing. And I appreciate you letting me talk about Trez here on the radio. I mean, it does give me, maybe an understanding a little bit, right? Like, Trez wasn't famous, but he was well-known, or whatever the term is. And I'm not famous, but I have obviously a microphone in front of me. And nobody, I mean, I'm sure some people knew that Trez and I were really close, but it's not like we advertised it. I can't imagine the people we talk about in sports who have to grieve publicly, right? Just like every part of their life being a public part of their life. I understand it, I guess, a little bit more. And I'll just say this too, like, hug the people close to you. You know, love the people close to you. I've been blessed in a lot of ways. And this is a hard one. My daughter asked me why. Like, why would God do this? And I didn't have a... Maddie, I know you're listening. I love you, kiddo. I don't have a good answer. I have belief without an answer. But I'll tell you this. One of the things that has made my life incredible, and I tried to do a better job yesterday of letting the people know, some of the people know, those of you I didn't get to, I'm so sorry, who've had an impact, is the friendships that I've had and the people I've gotten to know, and Trez was certainly one of them. And I talked to his dad yesterday, who I cannot imagine, I really can't, the pain that Ebony is feeling and Trez's parents are feeling. And his dad, I keep saying yesterday, but I'm all turned around, Tuesday, I found out Tuesday morning, about, I guess, 14 or 15 hours before it became public. And poor Trez's dad called me, you know, to talk just before the radio show. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to comfort this guy. I'm going to be there for him. I've met his dad. My parents had Trez and his dad over for Thanksgiving dinner many years ago. And instead, I just cried through the whole thing. And his dad was like a rock for me. I'm like, well, that's where Trez gets it. Better man than I am. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And so, Mr. Paylor, I know you're not listening either. But if you are, you hear this. Thank you for the son that you raised, and I'm sorry that you had to comfort me. You shouldn't be comforting me. I should be comforting you. I felt like a jerk. Although obviously it was a mark of respect and love for your son. I mean, it's heady stuff, right? It's heady stuff, and I'm really glad on this show, and he elevated so far beyond this show. I mean, my God, he was a star. But I'm really glad that I got, those of you that listened the 3 years, just about 3 years we were on in the evenings, and those of you that have been listening since we came back in this time slot, I guess back in September, A, thank you, and B, I'm glad those of you that listened enough or caught it got to hear Trez and I together, because it brought me nothing but joy to have him on the show. And there's some bittersweetness, you know, that's all that there is when you're mourning someone and you've lost someone, that he was on Friday. I mean, the guy was on Friday, and he was awesome, and he was great. And it ain't fair, and I know life isn't fair. So I miss him, and it feels really strange talking about it on the radio, to be honest. Feels strange talking to anybody about it. And I don't know if it was the right call, the wrong call, but it's the call that I made, and I just... I don't think I could have done another radio show not addressing it, having done the 2 hours on I guess, Tuesday, today, Thursday, in which I knew, and it wasn't my place to share that news. if you're interested in the guy or if you followed his work, there's a lot of great stuff that's been written. And to be fair, I haven't read it. My wife has read it and interpreted it for me. I've tried. I just can't do it yet. But I'm told, and sort of the pieces that Lori and friends have told me, that Vahe Vagorian at the Kansas City Star wrote a beautiful tribute column to Therese. That's where Therese and I met, the Kansas City Star. And Charles Robinson, I don't know Charles, other than my reputation, I'm told wrote a beautiful piece. And the one thing that I have consumed, and I needed to laugh. I didn't think I could do it, but I watched it. I did it last night late, to be honest with you, several old fashions into my night. It was not a healthy number of old fashions, but there you go. I'm at work, and that's what we did. There are blooper reels that the Kansas City Star put out and that Yahoo put out, and they're beautiful because they capture a side of Therese that is Therese that was hard to see sometimes. He was a private guy. He was a rock. And when he let his hair down, and I can't speak for other people, but with me, right, that was usually when it was just the two of us. That guy in those blooper reels is the guy that I loved and knew. I mean, I loved all of them. But this is a dude who, like, was it, I don't even know the musical artist. Was it somebody McDonald? Who was it? Some 80s person, Tom, that he was praising?
Yeah, Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald. He's singing Michael McDonald. They're like, you listen to Michael McDonald? I can't do a good Therese, but like, you know, God, respect. He always tell me, because people make fun of my Bob Seger love. And Therese was like, bro, don't ever give that up. Talent's talent. I'm like, you like Seger? He's like, sure. If I'd known Michael McDonald, we would have been rocking the Michael McDonald together at the Jukebox in Kansas City. And Seger and Therese both from Detroit, so I'm sure that was part of it too. All right. Weirdly, it feels good to talk about it. And that's really the first time that I've done it. Hug the people you love. Appreciate them. I appreciate you. Thank you. And Therese, love you, buddy. I know. I believe this. I believe you're looking down, and I wish you had more time. And Ebony and the Paylor family and everybody, Candace and Greg and Kansas City Star and the NFL community and everybody that's going through it, I feel you. And yeah, it sucks. It's not fair. I don't got, you know, none of us have good answers. But we've got the memories of one of the best people we ever got a chance to know. And I wish that blessing had lasted a whole hell of a lot longer. But I'm thankful for the time I had with the guy. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. And instead of doing some banter today, because I don't think I have it emotionally in me, I'm just going to turn over the update to Andrew Bogish.
Wonderful job talking about your friend this morning. And I heard Jim do this a similar thing yesterday, and it's a wonderful thing to hear, too. And when you have the ability to, I would certainly listen to Jim talking about Therese as well. It was both of you guys. The connection was real between people and shows, and everyone would be proud of what you said in this half an hour and what I heard Jim say yesterday as well about a guy who I only knew because of you two and being around these two shows. So again, my thoughts certainly to you and to everybody involved in this just really horrible, horrible story. And hate to be following along those same lines here, but we talk about Carl Anthony Towns right now. Everybody, I think, knows his story at this point. He lost his mother and six other family members to COVID. Multiple other relatives battled the virus as well. And then Towns got it himself in mid-January. He missed 13 games before returning last night.
I'm a high-risk case. COVID did not treat me well whatsoever. A lot of scary nights. My dad calling me 24/7.
Towns came back and scored 18 points with 10 boards in a 119-112 home loss to the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard scoring a season-high 36 in the win. The Lakers needed OT again to beat the Thunder 114-113. That's a six-game win streak for LA. The Bucks' five-game run ending in Phoenix 125-124. Giannis scored a season-high 47 but missed a jumper at the buzzer. Danilo Gallinari missed at the horn, so the Hawks lost in Dallas 118-117. The Mavs played the national anthem pregame, but they're being reminded by the league that they had to. Owner Mark Cuban says they stopped playing the anthem as they explored other options that would make everyone feel more included. Back on the court last night, the Bulls hit a franchise record 25 threes to beat the Pelicans 129-116. Toronto a 137-115 win in Washington, and the Nets snapped the three-game skid 104-94 over the Pacers. The official announcement of an All-Star game on March 7th in Atlanta should come today or tomorrow. The dunk contest, now likely to be at halftime of this game, the three-point contest, the skills competition will be involved somehow as well. Now, college hoops, two ranked Big Ten teams got together last night.
Wieskamp, three more. Yes, sir.
Harper Jr. right in his face, and Joe Wieskamp by himself holding Rutgers at bay to
this
point.
That's Gary Dolphin from Learfield IMG College. Joe Wieskamp with a season-high 26 as number 15 Iowa beat number 25 Rutgers 79-66. Fifth-ranked Villanova ran over Marquette 96-64, and eighth-ranked Houston an 82-65 win at South Florida, but number 10 Missouri lost at Ole Miss 80-59. The Red Sox, Royals, and Mets made a trade last night. The biggest name moving is left fielder Andrew Benintendi, ending up in KC. He was a big part of Boston's 2018 world title, but struggled in 2019, then played just 14 games last summer. Alex Bowman and William Byron will be in the front row for Sunday's Daytona 500. The rest of the 40-car field set by tonight's twin qualifying races. Just two games in the NHL last night. The Leafs pushed their win streak to 4-2 in Montreal, and the Bruins beat the Rangers in OT 3-2. And Rafael Nadal and women's top seed Ashley Barty won on day 4 of the Australian Open. Last year's champ Sophia Kenin losing in straight sets. Bill, back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew Bogus. I just got a really sweet text from my wife, who wrote, "Wow, Dad's so amazing. Now I know why he never, ever, ever gets fired. Wish that were so." Wish that were true, kiddo. All right. I love you, Madeline. I love you, Henry. I love you, Lori. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I know a lot of you. I just saw, I'm a bit of a mess today. Tweet Abby at SportsRiter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. To the gentleman in Michigan who had to do a show when he lost his best friend, I feel your brother. I'm sorry. Those of you that are sending kind words, I love you, and I appreciate you. And by the way, I think I try. We all try. I try to do a pretty good job appreciating my life and appreciating my blessings and knowing how lucky I am. And I am not just saying this. I love doing this show. I love working on this show. And I love the ability. I am honored by the opportunity to come into your world. I really am. And so I'm just going to continue to embrace that and realize how freaking lucky I am to be walking this earth and doing what I'm doing. All right, love you, Trez. 855-212-4CBS. We are going to hit some sports, obviously. NBA power rankings. This will also cheer me up. There's a team, they might be based in Brooklyn, who are nowhere near the top five, and I love it. I really do. Yeah, I'm a jerk. Next year on CBS Sports Radio.
Some will rise. Others will fall. Let the ranking begin on Writer Than You's NBA Power Rankings. Number 5.
I mean, it's hard to focus between the ridiculous All-Star Game drama and what to me is a fairly phony national anthem controversy. And look, we talked about the anthem. We could do it in the weeks ahead when it happened with Kaepernick. And I have a perspective that is different than many of yours. I have a perspective that's different than my grandfather's, who I was named after. Were he still here? But I ain't getting down right now. I'm just not with the whole, like, respect, whatever. I can't do it. Like, if you're one of those, now, if you have a perspective that is that perspective and you're also going to tell me that the Capitol riots were a travesty, we can have a conversation and agree to disagree. But to me, that is a distraction that is unnecessary. And Adam Silver's, it's not easy, but ham-fisted handling of the All-Star game is a distraction that is not necessary. And the world is really, let's be honest, a lot of distractions in the world that is hiding a pretty amazing NBA season with some pretty amazing teams. Can you drop the five again? Because I talked for like 20 minutes. You dropped a five.
Number
and I like
five.
Start talking about basic. What am I? Martha Stewart about cooking? Like everything but the rankings.
Number five.
Yeah, baby, bring it. The Milwaukee Bucks. By the way, I think the Milwaukee Bucks can win an NBA championship this year. They're 16-9. They're in second place in the Eastern Conference. They have, I don't know what Giannis is, top three player in the NBA, right? Like maybe top two. He is the back-to-back MVP. Like that's an actual, legitimate, real thing. They also, if you dive into the numbers a little bit, are one of the only teams right now in the NBA. It's early. It's early-ish, actually. We're well past the 20-game mark. In the top 10 in offensive and defensive rating, you're going to hear me beat this drum again and again and again. That's a really important gauge, right? And if you're looking for one of those, like, Ghostbusters things that detect, you know, poltergeist, doot, doot, doot. Like, if you're looking for, like, championship energy, you need to be both. Terrible. That was just a terrible, terrible sound effect, because I'm not good at those, but I keep trying. So, they could be higher. I just think there's a run of other teams right now, but this is the first time in a long time, maybe in the time that I've been doing the NBA Power Rankings for 3 years, that I honestly believe that all the teams in the top five can win an NBA championship this year, and teams outside of the top five can win an NBA championship.
number four.
All right, so this is a little braggadocio. This is a little bit of me riding what I believe, and this is a little bit just the product of the moment. But I've been telling you the Phoenix Suns, and I said that I thought the Suns could be a top, Tom, what did I say, three or four team? And I got politely chided by my friends Howard Beck and Tom Haberstroh.
Sure,
politely.
We can call it politely, sure.
Yeah, it was like, oh, Bill's cute. Oh, Bill's being the radio guy again. No, this is actually what I think. And there's a ways to go. I understand that. But it's not a good team. It's a great team. And those of you that listen know that I am really honest about stuff. I'm not going to pretend. And that includes with Chris Paul. But every remarkably talented person, I believe this, has a place they can go where it's the right fit in radio and politics and in sports. And I saw that last year with Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler is a complicated guy. He is beloved in some places and loathed in others. He has been the solution and the problem in multiple locker rooms. Solution on the floor, problem in the locker room. Look, there are people in radio in LA that tell you the same thing about me. Actually, that's true. That'd be like I was the problem in the problem. But my point being, it's a complicated world. But when that happened with Butler, I remember thinking, wow, like, Chris Paul could actually, I remember thinking, like, Chris Paul, like, he's a bit of a phony, and he rubs guys the wrong way that are veterans, even, like, not just veterans, like, guys that aren't rookies, and he's exacting, and his combination of prickly personality, it wears on guys. And this, I'm not making this up. I'm not guessing. I know this. I've been told this. I've seen it in action. I've written about it. Whatever. But I saw what he did with the Thunder, and I tried to make sense of it. I was wrong last year. I thought Chris Paul plus not very great team is going to equal a really bad team because he's Chris Paul. Wasn't true. It was Chris Paul with guys that he could dominate, that he could meld. You know, he's a coach in a way, right? Like, he's a hard-ass coach, and most guys don't respond well to that in the NBA, especially when you're not the coach. The Thunder did, but they didn't have the talent. And when he went to Phoenix, I thought to myself, oh, my God, that's the spot. That's the spot. Right now, they're number six defensively, and Chris Paul's a crazy underrated defensive player. They're only 13th in offense, but I've seen Chris Paul, you've seen him too, be able to have big closeout moments in the postseason, but his team collapses because they don't like the guy a lot of the time. I don't think it goes that way this year. Everything I thought was going to happen has happened. He's made DeAndre Ayton a borderline all-star. I mean, the pick and roll, and you get into sort of the geeky stuff. Devin Booker's a stud. They're well coached. This is a really good team, and they just beat a Milwaukee Bucks team where that felt like a playoff game. Those teams wanted it badly. So credit where it's due. I don't have to like you to respect you, and I don't have to respect you in order to like you. Chris Paul is a talented basketball player, and he has finally found the place that I think is the instrument of his opus, his career opus. Is that enough, especially in this brutal time? I don't know. But I think the Suns are good enough for that to be a possibility.
Number three.
I could put this team nine. I could put this team one. Probably not one. But the Clippers are such a complicated basketball team. And am I supposed to assess likelihood of failure down the road? I think I do a little bit. Certainly that's why the Nets aren't on this list. And the fact that, you know, they keep losing games they shouldn't. And the fact that, you know, Kyrie Irving, you're going to blame COVID now? First it's the pawns, now it's COVID? Yeah, you're the only one affected by COVID, bro. Good call. Thanks for letting us realize that that's an issue. Maybe we should get on that as a country, huh? Good stuff. Pawns like me can't grasp it. Can you, mother queen of the chessboard of life, explain to me again? I want to write this down. You said COVID, like with a C or a K? What's that guy would just shut the hell up? What was I talking about? The Clippers. Like the Nets, I'm not sure I really believe in them in the postseason. But, man, they're playing so well. They are not great defensively, but I think they will be. They have the second-best offense in the game. Kawhi Leonard's playing a bunch of games. He's playing at a crazy level. I think there's a bit of a chip on their shoulder. And let me give Ty Lue credit. I said this. I didn't think Ty Lue was the reason for the success in Cleveland. I made fun of him a lot because it's easy and it made me laugh. But the truth was, you don't know when somebody coaches LeBron. You don't know. Even with Vogel, it's hard to know how much of it's Vogel, although I think there's some, you know, defensively, the things that have been bought into. This was going to be the year that told us about Ty Lue, and so far the guy's a great coach, and credit to him. So Clippers are complicated, but they're talented, and they deserve to be, I think, in the conversation. They just got to prove in the postseason.
Number two.
Almost put these guys one, but I can't do it. And Jazz fans, don't be mad at me. You know what? I'm mad at you, and this is why. Last year, I bought a, I think 16-1, 20-1, $100 Vegas. Remember that was a thing? $100, a year and a half ago, $100 Vegas ticket for the Jazz to win. And I thought I was so smart. I was like, Conley's here. He's going to be the man. I'm all these all these groupthink NBA writers around. Never going to see me coming. Nah, they saw me coming. So did Vegas. They took my money. That's how they built a pyramid in the desert. I was a year off. I didn't have to get this year. I'm like, I'm out. I'm out on the Jazz. Now, Mike Conley figured it out. His stats have been remarkable this year. He is the player they thought they were getting when they got him a season ago. They are extremely well coached, and they are the only team in the NBA in the top five. They're really in the top four in offensive and defensive rating. Statistically, the best team in the NBA. They're fourth in offense. They're fourth in defense. They're second in net rating. They beat teams by almost 9 points per 100 possessions. They have defensive forces of nature. They have guys who can go out and get their own shots. They have a level of belief. They have in Conley, another playmaker, and a guy that can take a lot of weight off of Donovan Mitchell in particular. They are legit. They're just not on here because...
Number one.
I mean, the Lakers. What do you want me to tell you? This is the Tom Brady effect, right? I can't believe I just said that. God, I hate the guy making me use him to talk about LeBron James. Really? So good. I hate him, but I like him now because he got drunk. I don't know what that says about me as a person, but it does, and I just have to live with that. I mean, this team has the best defense in the NBA. They're only 12th in offense, but I think that'll improve. We'll see. I mean, the three-point shooting is going to be really interesting. But it's LeBron, man. It's LeBron, man. If you had LeBron, if you were forced to bet a year's worth of mortgage, I don't wish this on you, but let's just say that like an evil genie made you do it. It's the Lakers or it's the field to make the finals. And you are betting an amount of money that you're not comfortable with. You can't, but you have to do it. It's the Lakers, right? I'm not happy with the bet either. But I'm not betting against LeBron. I'm riding with LBJ.
Honorable mention.
So the Nets are on here. And look, to be fair to Brooklyn, maybe the reason they've struggled is Kyrie Irving's selfless PSAs about COVID and just trying to like Paul Revere this thing. I mean, really awesome of this guy to just ride from city to city screaming. I hadn't even heard of COVID until Kyrie let me know that the protocols have made life really hard for his team. And look, and I don't want to be disingenuous here. Like I have to look into it. I don't have it in front of me. Pretty sure he's the only team in the NBA dealing with the protocols. I think like it's a weird little bubble, like an alternate universe Time Warp Rick and Morty thing where it's just him. So that's hard. So I'm sorry that you're not on there, guys. Maybe you should learn to win some games, you self-absorbed waste of superstar talent. At least that's my prediction for the end. It may not go that way. So clip it. It's fine. It's fine. I saw a local New York station like, we're going to talk about Kyrie Silky Magic. Awesome, guys. Cool. Why don't you celebrate that guy to your last dying breath. I like Brooklyn as a city. All right, it's enough. It's never enough. But pawns like me can't harp ourselves.
Better luck next time.
Man, I do not like that, dude. As you can. The number of, what letter in the alphabet is F? Six? I don't know. But the number of those I have left in my tank has always been close to zero. It's been approaching zero. We have landed on zero. We have landed on straight zero. I still think the Celtics are good enough to win an NBA championship. And while there's a high level of unlikelihood that they're going to do it, by the way, I totally screwed this thing up. I meant to put the Celtics tie with the Lakers for one. Sorry, guys. It's been a day, Joel. Joel's been a day.
It's like okay.
Thank you, pal. all right, let's do one more.
You get an A for effort.
And this is the Raptors, who have quietly and they're interestingly not just back in the playoff picture after starting, I don't know what it was. I think it was 0-150 is what it felt like. They're 12-13. They're in that sort of crunched together spot between 4 and really 8. But they're in the playoff picture. And they get in the postseason, it could feel like house money. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. We're going to keep going with some NBA talk. Tom Haverstroh going to join me in a moment. And then I've got a Brady tank. I think Brady broke the psyche of NFL quarterbacks. And we're just going to dive into that unfortunate reality. All that coming up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
It is good to be surrounded by good people. It is even better when those good people are amazing at their job, because then you get to hang out with cool folks and get smarter. That certainly applies to Tom Haverstroh. This dude's so bright, it's like he needs to tamp it down a little bit. Like, just, you could be smarter than us. Just maybe, like, bring it down 30% so we feel better about ourselves. He is on the old Twitter machine of Tom Haverstroh. He's on the show. Tom, is this new, your avatar? I'm the guy that, like, sees avatars. I once said this to Howard Beck, and he's like, that's been my avatar for 3 years. This all white above you, bleached out, is that new, or is that a... that old thing?
I think I've had it for a few months.
I like it.
But look, man, I'm not here to you know, I'm not expecting you to know the day that I change my avatar on Twitter. So you're off the hook.
Did you hang up? Ryder, I'm not doing this segment anymore. National NBA insider and a man who has an amazing podcast, and it's better named than even this show, the Habershow podcast, because get it, his last name is Habershow. It's amazing. Mr. Habershow, would you like to get on the Suns bandwagon with me? Do you want to jump on this Suns top four bandwagon, or are you still feeling pretty good that they'll recede to a place where they're not quite there?
Oh, man, they're looking fantastic. I love the makeup of this team. You know, Chris Paul is as efficient as ever. He's a killer in the mid-range. It's so funny when we talk about, you know, the mid-range game is dead. You look at Chris Paul, and he's shooting 51% in the long mid-range and 50% in short mid-range. I mean, he's just so money in that spot. Devin Booker's been really good. You know, he's not putting up the same numbers as you might expect, but he has to share the ball with one of the most ball-dominant players in the league. And then Mikal Bridges is such a talented role player, defender, 3-and-D guy. I just love the makeup of this team. And if DeAndre Ayton can continue making strides as a defender, I'm on that bandwagon. I'm not quite there yet in terms of top four in the Western Conference at the end of the season, but, man, they've been really good this year.
Tom Habershaw here on the show. Tom, the Jazz are playing at an incredible level, and I'd love to hear if you would see them right now as the best team in the NBA, or that's getting a little bit ahead of things. But I'm also just fascinated by Mike Conley and what he was last year versus what he was this year. Whether it's him or other pieces of that team, what are you seeing in Utah that, to your mind's eye, has led to a pretty impressive start of the season?
Who's the best three-point shooting team in the NBA? It's tough, right? Like, off the top of your head, you probably don't say it's the Utah Jazz, but it is. The Utah Jazz.
I only was going to guess it because you asked me. I'm like, it's got to be Utah, right? But I'm like, I'm not going to answer because it could be a trick question.
And they're taking more three-pointers than any team in the NBA. That right there is the reason why they are the best team record-wise in the NBA. They've taken real strides by enabling their elite three-point shooters, and they have a lot of them, to shoot at a high volume. They're like the Houston Rockets, but in Salt Lake City. It's really odd because you look at Rudy Gobert, who has the range, you know, of a two-year-old standing around the basket. He is setting these screens and diving to the rim, and then they have four shooters out deep on the perimeter, and they're shooting at a ridiculous clip. You know, that was the key to them becoming an elite team and that top-tier title contender is their offense. This year, they have the fourth best offense in the NBA, and it's been catapulted by the fact that they are shooting an amazing job from deep. And it's not just one player. Like, it's not like Donovan Mitchell turned into Damian Lillard and Steph Curry. It's that collectively, the rising tide is floating all boats. Jordan Clarkson shooting a ridiculous percentage. Joe Ingles, Mike Conley, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic, all of these role players and like really good players are shooting a ridiculous percentage from downtown. And you might say, hey, that's not sustainable. Come on, it's the Utah Jazz. But guess what? They had the best three-point field goal percentage last season. The only difference is that Quinn Snyder, the head coach, is like, hey, if we're the best three-point shooting team in the NBA by field goal percentage, why don't we take more of them? And this is what's happening, is everyone's looking at this Utah Jazz team fully empowered and realizing, hey, no one's going to stop us if we have Rudy Gobert as a defensive player of the year and just bombing away from downtown like we're a bunch of Steph Currys out here. It's been amazing to watch, and I think Quinn Snyder definitely deserves consideration for coach of the year for what he's done offensively.
Tom, how many, and I know this question is tricky about how many Western Conference teams do you think are viable contenders to make the finals, because there's this great big roadblock named LeBron James. But, you know, taking that into account, how many championship-level, contending-level teams would you count right now in the Western Conference?
I think there are three. It's Utah, the Lakers, and the Clippers. And then there's a big drop-off from there. Denver needs to really shore up their defense. They waxed the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, but, you know, everyone can wax the Cleveland Cavaliers these days. I think there's three
three teams in the Western Conference, and there's a couple in the Eastern Conference that, you know, I think Philly has achieved that status. They play amazing on both ends of the floor. Joel Embiid is a legit MVP candidate. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Milwaukee are still right there. And the team I'm still not sold on are the Brooklyn Nets. I have been on this program talking about how I'm not buying the Brooklyn Nets defense. And I was really early on this. As soon as the trade happened, I pegged them as fifth in the power rankings in the Eastern Conference. And people were just beside themselves at the idea that Brooklyn Nets aren't a championship contender or even a top four team in the East. But the defense has been atrocious. Last night they had a really good night, but a larger sample size is they are atrocious defensively. And I really do think that this is a team that could have a real early flameout in the playoffs because of the fact that their defense is so porous. I know the offense is crazy good, but that is diminishing returns. You know, like how many ball dominant stars do you need to have an elite offense? Once you have James Harden and Kevin Durant, I don't think you need a Kyrie Irving. I think you need an elite defender, and they just don't have any of that on the roster right now. And I think when you talk about title contenders, there's three in the Western Conference, and there's two-ish in the Eastern Conference until the Brooklyn Nets upgrade defensively.
I'm 100% with you on the Nets, and I would go much, much further and say no one needs Kyrie Irving, but that is a different topic for a different day. I just want to get that shot in. Tom Haberstroh here on the show. Tom, something interesting about Philly, and I'm curious your read on this, your perspective. Last year with the Clippers, that Doc Rivers Clippers team, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I think they were fifth or sixth or seventh. They were certainly in the top 10 in three-point shooting percentage, but middle of the pack in terms of how many threes they took per game. Doc is now with the Sixers. Daryl Morey is in charge. I think there was certainly a reasonable presumption from me and other people that they might shoot more three-point shots if they could find the people to do that. They're middle of the pack right now in three-point shooting percentage at 15th, but they take among the fewest three-point shots in the NBA. Now, it's working. They're playing really well. Is that just a Doc Rivers philosophy problem or reality? Is that something that's adjustable? Can you just help me make sense of it?
Yeah, so they just acquired in the offseason one of the best three-point shooters of all time, Seth Curry. Not Steph Curry. He's great too. One of the best of all time, if not the best. But Seth Curry is, percentage-wise, right up there, top five in NBA history in three-point field goal percentage. Right now he's shooting 51% from deep. That was a huge acquisition for them. Danny Green, also a huge acquisition for them. I'm really curious, though. You know, you're right. You're right on the money. 27th in three-point rate as a percentage of their overall field goals. That is not what I would suspect from a Daryl Morey team. Daryl Morey, the GM of the 76ers, just came from Houston where they were breaking records for three-pointers left and right. So it is curious. But, of course, Daryl Morey is not the head coach. It's Doc Rivers. And, you know, I think the first half of the season, I think Doc Rivers' primary priority is making sure that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are happy, that they're eating, that they're getting the looks that they want. And then I think the next phase of this is trying to expand their offense and building off of that foundation. You get those two stars happy, and then you start to really build on that foundation. So I suspect that with Seth Curry being out with COVID protocols, and then coming back and trying to get his conditioning back, I think you're going to see that three-point rate start to skyrocket as the second half of the season approaches, simply because I think everyone's more familiar with each other. And now that Joel Embiid is an MVP candidate, I think they're going to make other teams capitalize on other teams focusing on Embiid and then just rain from downtown. I expect that number to climb. It's a great observation by you, Mr. Bill Ryder.
It's a great answer, too, because I didn't have a good one. I love that. Tom Haberstroh here on the show. MVP, it's early. It's not time to vote yet. I know that. I get it. But we are well past that. Where are we at the 25-game mark now? We're in that range or beyond. So there's enough of a sample size that we're not looking at seven games like I did in 2010 with the Heat to Tim Donovan's great joy and making broad proclamations. God, it's my favorite stories. There's enough data here to sort of make educated guesses about what we're seeing. So for you, what would an MVP ballot look like right now?
Yeah, so my number one pick right now is Nikola Jokic is the MVP. And I know if you're looking at the standings, 13 and 11 Denver Nuggets, you're picking an MVP from that. But he's been that good. I mean, he's outrageously good. He's averaging 27 points, 9 assists, 11 rebounds. He's shooting 56% from the floor, 40% from three, and 85% from the free throw line. I mean, he is outrageously effective. And, you know, defensively, he's been better than what I think his reputation suggests. And so when you look at his numbers, the number one PER in the NBA, his just on-court, off-court metrics, he's been sensational for Denver. And I think with a little bit of better luck in late-game situations, they're better. And I think that Denver's probably going to improve as the season goes on, and I think so will the Joker's MVP candidacy. Joel Embiid is number two. LeBron is number three. Then you have Kawhi Leonard and Stephen Curry rounding out that top five. Kevin Durant, if he plays more, I think he's going to get in that conversation too. He's been sensational this year. So many good candidates for MVP. It's just you're splitting hairs at this point. But for me, Nikola Jokic is so good this year. He's the story of the season in my book. I think he's right now the front runner for MVP.
Tom Haberstroh here on the program. I'm Bill Ryder, CBS Sports Radio's Ryder Than You. Tom, I don't want to presume that the NBA has been as wise as they should have been the last 10 years. So I'll ask the question this way. Is there an MVP vote, a number one vote that you have filled out that you regret or regret you would have had if you didn't have a vote but should have over the last 10 years? When you look back at the last 10 years, is there a person that you had either on a ballot or you would have if you'd had a vote that year as the number one MVP in the league that in retrospect, you wish you had voted differently?
It's a great question. I can't think of one off the top of my head here, but I will say that in retrospect, you and I were living one of the craziest MVP votes in NBA history. Is Derrick Rose in 2011 yeah. won MVP where all the metrics, all the numbers pointed to someone else, LeBron James or Dwight Howard. But LeBron James wasn't going to win MVP in a year where everyone was so disgusted at the move of him switching teams to Miami and then just all of the scrutiny that came with that season. It really is amazing to look at the numbers, you know, looking back a decade later at how the voting was not reflective of the actual production. And I think it was more so that people didn't understand what made that Chicago Bulls team so great was the defense. Joakim Noah, Omer Asik, like the defense that then Taj gives and the defense that they had on that team was outrageous. And Tom Thibodeau just built an absolute powerhouse defensively. And that was the reason why they had 60 games. Like Derrick Rose was incredible. But in terms of value, I think it was more the defense than it was Derrick Rose. And I know that's heresy in Chicago. But I think when you look back at the MVP ballots over the past decade, I think that one stands out as the most controversial, especially when you consider that Dwight Howard has had just a real fall from grace with his back surgery in L.A. But that season, 2010-2011, Derrick Rose, Dwight Howard, and LeBron, I think we're going to look back and wonder, did we get that right?
Tom Haberstroh here on the show. It's interesting, Tom, because I'm sure that there are turning points where the numbers that are used to make assessments about these votes go from being an afterthought or not the thought that it really should be to the driving force. And I mean, for me, I remember in baseball, because I lived there, I was writing a lot of baseball the year before I switched over to the NBA, Zach Greinke, I think that was 2009, where he won the Cy Young Award, but it was still a time where people were horrified that he didn't win 20 games, right? I think he was 16-8 or 16-7 or whatever it was. Do you think the Derrick Rose vote could have been a turning point? Not a turning point that actually allow the analytics to win the day, but that maybe in retrospect has convinced a lot more voters that this is an important part of how we evaluate players.
Oh, it's such a great point about Greinke, because in the NBA, it's team wins, right?
Right.
Team
yes,
wins
right.
are the driving factor of who wins MVP. Look at Giannis Antetokounmpo last year. Milwaukee Bucks won a crazy number of games. Giannis wins the MVP. For so long, Bill, the orthodoxy of like NBA journalism, the reporters, their vote primarily was, hey, who has the best team? Who's the best player on that best team? And then go vote that way. And I think that shift is happening where I think a lot more people are open-minded to the idea of like a Nikola Jokic being an MVP or a Stephen Curry being an MVP this season, even though the team hasn't been performing outrageously well, because now we have on-court, off-court numbers where we see the Golden State Warriors, how they perform when Steph is on the bench, and it's just awful. And same argument could be made for Joel Embiid when he goes to the bench. The 76ers are nowhere near the same team. So I think we're just becoming a little bit more nuanced. And so it's not so much the team standings like it is in baseball where you see, hey, how many pitcher wins does that guy have? That's the Cy Young. Now I think you're seeing a similar shift in the NBA thinking where because we have more available measurements and more accurate measurements of player value, we're no longer in the Stone Age of saying, okay, who has the most wins? Who's the best player on that team? And I think we're better for it.
Tom Havisham on the show. Tom, I mentioned earlier in the program that a year and a half ago, I bet on the Jazz to win an NBA championship at, I think, 16 or 20 to 1. And I was a year ahead of schedule, and I'm dumb, and I need to stop betting on sports in general. We need to use big brains to direct our gambling instincts, and that is why I am proud to share with America that they can look to you instead. I'm going to look to you to give us some insight. What's the give us the big number bets part of what you'll be doing, and how people can get on that info to make some cash, hopefully.
Yeah, so on my Twitter feed at Tom Haberstroh, I'm putting out a new newsletter called Big Number Bets, which is going to be my weekly look at Wednesday night games, making three picks based on the data, what the analytics are telling me and what people are telling me around the league is just certain trends or what I'm hearing about player value. And so I'm now doing a newsletter every Wednesday morning. Sign up, Big Number Bets. You can find it at Tom Haberstroh on my Twitter. And you'll get in your inbox three picks from my brain. Last night, my picks went 2-1, Paul Millsap, Ja Morant, and Trae Young. Trae Young, I'm just very upset at him. He got more rebounds than I thought he would. It's such an aberration. But anyway.
That's obnoxious of him. That's obnoxious of Trae Young.
I know. I mean, and the gall on him to do it before halftime. Like, he ruined my bet by halftime. So it was just an embarrassing showing for me. But Paul Millsap, Ja Morant came through for me. So I'm 2-1. It's early, but every week, Wednesday, I'm going to put out a new newsletter with my picks. We'll see how it goes, but I'm expecting to be very humbled like you were last year with the Utah Jazz. By the way, I don't think that was a bad pick. If Mike Conley's shot goes in, that is maybe a really smart pick there with all that value on the Utah Jazz.
To be fair with me in gambling, any pick I make can't be smart in the long run because it's just heartbreak. Tom, you don't even care about this, but I'm going to tell you, had the Chiefs covered, I would have won 10 grand. And like an idiot, I didn't even like hedge. I'm like, whatever, the Chiefs are going to win. So even when I'm smart, I'm dumb. When you're smart, you're just smart because you're Tom Haberstroh. At Tom Haberstroh on Twitter. Dude, I love having you on the show. I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for making time.
You got it, Bill. Hang in there, buddy. It's been a tough few days, but if I could, I'd hug you through this phone right here because we all need it right now. So hang in there, Bill.
Thanks, buddy. Don't make me cry. Again, I appreciate you. Thank you, Tom.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, welcome back into the show. I don't think we have a live programming alert yet. We're efforting it because I'm the only person in radio who's dumb enough to do it on a regular basis. Hey, you know what you should do on the radio? Decide this somewhere else. No, let's do this. I want to talk to you about Brady and how he has basically broken the NFL matrix. But the executive producer underscore Tom DiBenedetto, who I don't think I've mentioned his name today because I'm a bad guy. I'm not a bad guy. I've been off. Other stuff going on. Producer underscore Tom had a better idea. Let's just open the show with it tomorrow.
I'm excited about this topic. We need more space.
Long tease.
Can't
we do
rush
need
it.
More space. He really has. And I'll just lay this out there. It's one thing if you're Deshaun Watson, right? And you're like, I am tired of this ridiculous organization. Russell Wilson, who is coached by Pete Carroll in an organization that made him the focal point and moved on correctly from the Legion of Boom when there was a schism in that locker room, that has won a Super Bowl and made two? Tom Brady has destroyed everyone. I was sitting here telling Tom Haberstroh a few minutes ago the money that I cost myself by not winning that bet. And just, it's retrospect, but Tom said it again and again and again. I rode Brady the whole playoffs. And I was just like, you are all, you know, not you, but many people are dumb for, you're going to take Aaron Rodgers, you got. And then I made the exact same mistake with Patrick Mahomes. You idiots. You group thinkers can't think for your, Patrick Mahomes will win it all by 40. Out teased at -15. Oh, Tom Brady. Tom, I don't know what movie this is from. Tom Brady, you hurt so good. It's so brutal. He's so talented. And you got poor Bogus over here. I mean, Bogus hates this man, and he's just going to keep winning Super Bowls for the next 4 years. Are you okay with, like, are you just going to give up football the next 5 years? Because he ain't retiring until he's 50.
Well, there's that, and he keeps doing things that would make me like him under normal circumstances, like the Gronk commercial's funny. The tweet about avocado tequila yesterday was funny as he was drunkenly taken back home. Like, you know, he doesn't make it easy to just simply dislike him. Like, he's trying to win me over, at least from a personal standpoint, off the field. And every once in a while, I have a moment of weakness. I'm like, maybe he's not that bad. Then he wins the Super Bowl again. I remember, yes, he is that bad. And we're back to disliking him.
Can I make two observations? And you can decide which you think applies.
Okay.
Okay. Observation one. Often highly successful, ambitious people are misunderstood and misliked because people don't know them. And two, the devil's real charming. The actual devil is charmer.
Now, I'm not relating him to the devil.
I'm just making observations, Bogus.
If you are.
I mean, don't you think the devil can tell a joke? That's a new thing now. I guess when people interview for jobs, what interviewers do is now tell me a joke. Tell me a funny joke.
Oh, my God.
I know. Terrible, right?
I better never be unemployed.
Knock, knock. Who's there? That question. That's my joke. Your question is the joke. But I bet the devil could roll in and be like, I don't know what the devil looks like. Like, probably like Brad Pitt. But younger, or Tom Brady. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, golden skin, well hydrated, flexible, champion football player, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it could go either way. I'm gonna err on the side of I think he's probably. I don't know if he's a nice guy. The thing is, all the narratives, and I'm with you by the way, but everything's likable. I mean, the guy was drafted in the sixth round, right? Was overlooked. I mean, Bill Belichick went from being the greatest coach of all time. There's somewhere in between, but to the bully who didn't appreciate Tom's greatness, I mean. The Gronk commercial is amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's running a halfway house for Antonio Brown at his property, too, and to make sure Brown stays somewhat in a straight line while he's a Buccaneer. I mean, there's...
That makes me hate him, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, that's in the other column.
That. Yeah.
That's in the other column. And I don't make those jokes lightly. Lori always laughs. Like, I can't have three numbers of six. Like, if I ever got a... There was a house that was for sale when we lived in Des Moines, Iowa, that Lori, like, really liked. And, like, I went there... And it was in our price range. It was amazing. I'm like, maybe. And then I like saw the house number. I'm like, no, I won't live here. And she's like, I'm like, I'm not living in 666 whatever Pleasantville Street. Like, if I ever get a license,
yeah, that's a bad decision.
I'm not doing it, right? So I don't.
No, you can't.
You know, I ain't making that joke lightly. I'm just saying, is he a great guy or have I been misled by the charm? I can't. I want to hate him too, and it's going away. I can feel it slipping away, Bogus.
No, no, no. Hold on tight. Hold on tight. The time to like him is 7 years post-playing career when he's like, you know, maybe he ages a tiny little bit and all we have to worry about is, you know, a commercial here or there and we can just watch him play with his kids, you know, coach somebody's Pop Warner football. But as long as he's playing, that you cannot soften on here. You cannot do it. You need to stay strong. And put all of your mojo away from him, behind, you know, against him.
You're right. He's like the way it used to be for presidents. I'm not sure that's still true. But remember, you know, you didn't have to like Bill Clinton's politics. You didn't have to like George Bush's politics. But when they, all of a sudden, they were retiring, oh, shucks. That's the former president.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy. Not sure that still applies. I mean, not in any general sense, just, or maybe a very general sense. But I'm just saying, like, I'm not, you know, the world's a changing place. But my point being, in the old times when that was the way that it went, maybe that's how it works for Tom Brady. Also known as, and by the way, George H.W. Bush's presidency, also known, I'm pretty sure, when Tom Brady was still in the league. I don't have the math in front of me. It's been a minute.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Brady had a Reagan hat in his locker at some point, too, right?
All evidence points to yes.
But you know, I'll say this. Those guys are all still Mr. President, right? For perpetuity, you're still president, blah, blah, blah. He can stay Mr. Super Bowl champ, whatever you want. We can call him whatever you want, honorary title, after he's playing, but only then is the time to soften here. Otherwise, be strong, be tough, and root for the Falcons. I don't know who can
you
knock them off.
You just made me realize, while trickle-down economics doesn't work, and I believe the London Institute of Economics or one of these came out with a survey, it doesn't work. Tom was ahead. Like, trickle-down football excellence works with Tom Brady. Think about that. Like, it didn't work as a matter of policy and tax, and that, you know, live and learn, I guess. But Tom Brady is actual trickle-down football greatness. We have to come up with a better term, trickle-down economics. Trickle-down Tom Bradyism? Still not there.
No.
He's so cool, though, isn't he? I hate it.
Trickle-down dominance?
Seriously.
Ooh, trickle-down dominance is really good. Look at that. I have the beanie good. For the win. Look
Seriously.
At that. All right. Like it. I'm trying to think of new and creative ways to like lead into the update, but I feel like every time I do, your reaction is, do you want me to do the update? Do you not want me to do the update?
Feel like maybe, I can stop that part.
Feel like I'm selling it. I feel like I'm so into the update. I'm just trying to like casually be like, hey man, it's sort of like when you see a really attractive woman when you're single, hey, how you doing, right? How am I doing? What do you think? I'm not doing well? I love your update. My point is, I think the update's the sexiest part of the show. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I basically want to hit on your update, but I'm awkward with it, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be like, do you think the update wants to get a drink or not really? Like, is the update single?
Swipe right, and then we'll get back to you.
I don't know. I'm such a married dork.
Me too.
A buddy of mine gave me his phone once. It was like, do it for me. Like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm like, okay. Swipe right is good. Swipe left is bad or whatever it was. And I thought I was swiping right, but I was doing it the wrong way. Oof. I don't even know how to swipe right, apparently. He came back. He's like, what the hell? Apparently had a real interesting couple weeks.
Yeah, I don't know what the right reference is either. Right, left, up, down, whatever right. It is. I don't know how to do right. It.
Hearty, hearty, heart emoji. I don't know what the...
You guys remind me of a relay race when they're actually doing the handoff and there's like that moment when they're both running and the person in front's like waiting with their hand out and the person behind's still like jogging and they're just like jogging, waiting for the exchange. That's what this is.
Oh, yeah. So on that note,
should I do an update?
I'm so excited about this update. Like, I feel like the update and I could be good friends.
We'll see. Let's take it slowly for now. So Matthew Stafford is talking about his trade from Detroit to L.A. He tells WDIV Television and the Detroit Free Press that requesting a trade from the Lions was probably the hardest conversation he's ever had. Stafford also detailing the injuries he played through this past season. They include a torn thumb ligament, torn elbow ligament, broken rib cartilage, a tear in his left knee, and a sprained right ankle. Don't look now, but somebody has begun their push for a better spot in next week's power rankings.
Hard right in front of the net bench. Moving left to the foul line. The lob for Jordan. Another emphatic right-hand jam on the alley-oop. And Brooklyn with a 55-29 lead with 2:08 to go in the second quarter. And Indiana needs another timeout.
That's Chris Carino on Nets Radio. Brooklyn on its way to a 62-30 halftime lead on the Pacers, then a 104-94 victory. It came 24 hours after Steve Nash's team lost at last place Detroit.
You can't be having fun the way we're playing. So tonight there's a lot of smiles, a lot of joy, and there's a lot of passion for their teammates and their job. And so just that is something to build on. So I was proud of them for bringing it. We asked for it and they delivered. And that's, you know.
And Durant comes back tomorrow likely. I don't know that they lose again. Last night's win snapping a 3-game slide for the Nets. The Pacers have now dropped 4 in a row. The Raptors just announced they will play this entire season in Tampa as their home base because of the U.S.-Canadian border restrictions. The Dodgers and righty Walker Buehler avoiding today's arbitration hearing with a 2-year deal reportedly worth $8 million. It can go as high as $12.2 million. Last night, the Red Sox sent left fielder Andrew Benintendi to the Royals in a deal that also involved the Mets. Boston's return includes outfielder Franchy Cordero and minor league righty Josh Winkowski. Alex Bowman won the poll last night for Sunday's Daytona 500. William Byron will start second. The rest of the 40-car field will be set by tonight's two qualifying races. Neymar has been ruled out for 4 weeks with a hip injury, so he'll miss at least the first leg of PSG's Champions League round of 16 matchup with Barcelona. That game is Tuesday. The second leg is March 10th. Here in the States, MLS has pushed back opening day to April 17th since owners and players just agreed to a revised CBA. The league still needs a new start date for training camps, and Rafael Nadal reaches round 3 of the Australian Open, but last year's champ, Sofia Kenin, upset in straight sets today. Bill, back to you.
Yeah, she can and do it. Bogish. Oh, I think I'm getting a sell. Can I admit something that makes me a borderline? It's a bad thing.
Okay, sure.
I'm so happy Neymar's hurt. I'm so glad. I meant to check this morning because I know it's coming out. Good. I hope you miss the rest of the season, or at least Barcelona. It's wrong. Like that's how you know I actually. I'm so glad he's injured. I hope Mbappe gets injured too. I do.
You're getting greedy now.
I want the whole team to get COVID, be healthy and safe, but have to quarantine. I want to play their B team. Do they have B teams in France? That's who I want.
Yeah,
to play.
I don't know how that works. I know that Leipzig can't go to London, right, to play. Or no, Liverpool can't go to Germany to play Leipzig. I don't know if they have to figure that where that match is going to be next week. So they might make them play somebody against Barcelona if they have all overrun by COVID. I don't know.
I'm not wishing COVID on anyone. Don't get me wrong. But I guess I was. I mean, I'm
How about food poisoning? How about food poisoning?
I want no one to be positive or have food poisoning, but I want an erroneous positive test and contract tracing to shut down PSG and allow Barcelona to win the first leg of that thing 11-0. So there's no because they could. I mean, PSG with the back line of Barcelona could score 7 goals. That's what I want. Oh shoot! Was the update listening? Did I just ruin my chances of the update?
The update doesn't love pettiness, but it also likes soccer. So you're kind of 50-50 right now.
The update don't like pettiness. We got no future together, Bogish. Thank you, pal. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. Let's do buy or sell and close out the show next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Writer Than You, the name of the program. I'm Bill Ryder. Thank you for listening. Tough 48 hours. Tough show. Tough couple shows. Thank you for being part of that experience, and thank you for listening to the program. Before we get into buy or sell, I got to get a little soccer expertise from Tom DiBenedetto. I've been into soccer really, it's weird. I don't know what happened. I was watching it casually. I was into Barcelona because I like the city a lot. My wife and I would like to spend some time there when we retire 50 years from now, hopefully. And I just became obsessed with it. Like, I'm over the top obsessed with my neighbors. I think are put out when there are Barcelona games on because I am very loud. Like, people think I'm attacking someone in the house when I scream. But I'm still kind of learning. Tom, I guess this is really the first time that I've been really invested in two-legged ties. Like, two-legged when you play and there's two games, one home and away, and it's the overall score. So Barcelona lost to Sevilla yesterday in Sevilla, 2-0. What is, like, the analogy? How many runs am I down in the ninth or eighth inning? Like, what is the degree of difficulty in Barcelona, who didn't score an away goal, it was a tiebreaker, winning basically 3-0 or 4-1 in the second half of this thing?
It's not crazy. And two-leg, for whatever reason, two-leg match setups like this end up being higher scoring very often and a lot more open very often, especially the second leg, especially because your team goes in knowing that they need at least 2 goals to tie and force extra time. So I think usually it's the line between 2 and 3 goals. 3 goals down is usually the big hole. 2 goals down is not ideal, but surmountable.
Okay. And so if we end 3-1 and 2-0, is that ball game because they have an away goal?
Yeah, so you have the same number of overall goals, but they scored in Barcelona Stadium in that scenario, so they would go through. Yeah.
So there's only extra time if the score is 2-0.
Yep.
Back in Barcelona.
Yep.
All right, we got it. I'm just preparing myself emotionally for what's going to be a pretty outrageous response from me.
And the PSG news with Neymar, I mean, it's terrible news for Paris, but it's amazing news for Barcelona. It changes the whole season outlook, honestly. It gives them a chance to actually win, and PSG is one of the best teams in the entire tournament. So not only would they survive getting through them, they would be eliminating one of the biggest rivals left.
And one of the best attacking teams in the world, and Barcelona's back line
terrible
is
matchup.
Decimated.
Yep.
I mean, it's been injuries and terrible. I mean, Umtiti is a freaking disaster. He has personally been responsible for the last 4 goals Barcelona's given up.
Which is crazy. I don't know what happened to that guy. And he's French, too, which would be funny if he gets exposed by France's best team.
I'm hoping he's not playing. All right, enough soccer talk, even though I know the bosses love it. Let's do buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
So Zach LaVine's outstanding season continued last night in Chicago, and this time he got some high-quality help as he and teammate Kobe White became the first teammates in NBA history to each make eight or more three-pointers in a single game. That's right, not even the Splash Brothers can claim that accomplishment. The Bulls easily beat the Pelicans, and after the game, LaVine discussed the offensive outburst.
We're explosive enough to be able to do that to really good shooters. You know, obviously you're not going to be able to hit shots like that throughout the whole entire game, but, you know, and I'm glad, I'm very happy for Kobe that, you know, he got back on track. He showed that confidence in the game.
LaVine's 46 points were three short of his career high 49. Buy or sell, Zach will post a 50-point game at some point this season.
I'll buy it just because he's turning that direction.
Buy.
I'll ask you this. In about 3 hours, I'm going to fill out my All-Star ballot. And the only spot that is really unknown is the final guard spot in the Eastern Conference. Bradley Beal's in. It's between LaVine or Trae Young. Buy or sell, I should put LaVine over Trae.
Sell.
I think so, too.
Still there, but, man, last night really kind of made it almost dead even, so it's tough.
Trae Young got fouled, though, and should have had the opportunity to win the game when he got bowled over, right? So it's like a different kind of
totally
impact.
And he's played, I mean, he's had such a good first half, such a good, well-rounded start of the season
right.
So far. I mean,
it's a tough one.
The Lakers beat the Thunder in overtime last night, due in large part to some late-game heroics from LeBron James, but the vibes were slightly subdued afterwards as several Lakers, including Kyle Kuzma, expressed frustration at their third straight game that required overtime.
That's something we have to address, obviously. You know, three straight overtimes, no matter if it's a win, whatever, you know, it's kind of unacceptable by our standards, but, you know, I think we did a good job of just getting timely stops and, you know, hit a few baskets.
To the surprise of many, LeBron James has not yet missed a game this season, despite having his shortest offseason of his career, and his 130 minutes over the last three games is the most he's played in any three-game stretch so far as a Laker. Buy or sell, LeBron is playing too many minutes this season.
I buy it.
Buy.
But I think he's doing it, and my theory on this, I think he really, really wants to win MVP this year. I think it's important to him, and I think that's the reason he's playing these kind of minutes, because he understands that he probably will be judged on a curve that isn't fair. Numbers and resume for a team that would get someone else the MVP, I think he's got to be a little bit higher. And so he's gonna pad those numbers.
Circling back to your Suns, they continue to impress this season and maybe hit their high point so far, absorbing a 47-point performance from two-time reigning MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo to beat the Bucks last night. The game ended on a missed 20-footer at the buzzer by Giannis, however, and after the game, Devin Booker shaded the superstar.
What were you thinking when Giannis got that last look?
That we're in good shape.
Buy or sell the Suns' newfound swagger.
Ooh, I missed that. I like it.
Bye.
Part of the reason I like it is that they don't have to worry about Giannis's reaction unless they all make the finals. And if that happens, they've all justified their swagger and Giannis's excellence, you know, respectively. Damn. Sounds like a Chris Paul team to me.
Yeah, it does. They got an edge.
Disrespect?
They got an edge.
Let's go.
And this one is just candy for you. The Nets bounce back from a somewhat embarrassing loss to the Pistons on Tuesday night with a sound all-around performance against the Pacers and an easy home win last night. But since you weren't here yesterday, I have to play this claim Kyrie Irving made after the Tuesday night loss about the fact that his opinion, that the Nets are facing unique obstacles this season.
We are the team that the NBA put the most games on. We're the team that gets someone taken out during COVID, during the games. We're the team that has to deal with the refs. We're the team that is literally battling against so many odds that at this point, it's not even a reason to continue to comment on it. They are what they are.
Buy or sell, Kyrie has a point, and the Nets are facing more adversity than other teams this season.
Did he say that they're literally battling odds? I mean, does he know what the word literally means?
Sell.
Wait, the odds have manifested themselves in real life, and you're in a physical altercation with the odds? Oh, God, it's 4-1!
Sell.
It's coming! What?
Sell.
Let me give you a laundry list of excuses. This isn't even worth talking about. Then there's this and this and this, and somebody gave me a mean look. Whatever. What was the question?
If it involved, sell.
Yeah, I sell. I sell, yes.
Sell.
Not interested.
Another item from this week. Sorry.
Oh, I'm not done.
No,
sorry. These pawns, these pawn reporters don't know anything. These idiots, intellectuals like me, are literally out here battling. You don't even know the odds came to life. got on a plane from Vegas, flew to Brooklyn. They're battling my basement. They're battling me. I had to get a baseball bat to bat, literally battle the odds. Do you know what literally means? Or are you literally... I'm not even going to finish that sentence. Let's just...
Yeah, that minus 120 really has a good jab, man. You got to watch out.
Yeah, minus 120 is mean. Minus 120 grew up in a tough household, knows how to fight. I mean, minus 120 is the boy named Sue of odds, man. Like, always a favorite. That'll learn to be tough.
That might be my favorite sell ever. That was great. The other item, one more item to hit, Major League Baseball announced that they will be deadening the baseballs for the 2021 season this week, which has struck a lot of fans as a bit odd because they never admitted that the balls were juiced over the last two seasons in the first place. Over the last full season of Major League Ball in 2019, the total Major League home run record was smashed by a whopping 11%, and the 6,776 total homers that season was an absurd 21% jump from just the prior season. Buy or sell, deadening the balls or basically restoring them back to what they were is a necessary move for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I'll buy it, but
buy.
Not as necessary as the commissioner deciding he wants to golf more and leaving the sport into less incompetent hands so it has the opportunity not to be destroyed by his lack of successful stewardship.
Buy or sell, it'll work, and the home run totals will be noticeably different this season.
I think they will. I mean,
buy.
Look, baseball lies, so I'm not sure they're telling the truth, but they're telling the truth, I think so. Well, that was a really, really interesting show, and if you were listening a couple hours ago, you know that I talked about my very dear friend, Trez Paylor, who passed away a couple days ago, and that's not an easy thing to talk about, and I don't love getting that emotional publicly on the radio. Not embarrassed by it, just not, you know, those grief is usually pretty private, and you know, the way to honor somebody is to talk about them, not to be unable to talk about them. But it felt good to, so many people have written just incredible things, and I haven't listened yet, but the guys told me that Jim Rome spent a huge chunk of his show yesterday talking about Therese, which, you know, another reason Jim is just such a good dude. And that was the impact that Therese had on people. I mean, an incredible guy, and I loved him, and, I'm obviously heartbroken, and I'm pretty freaking angry. I'm pretty pissed off. And to all of you who have lost folks, been tweeting at me, I feel you now. I get it, and I'm sorry. And thank you for all the love. And to Trez's family, Ebony, his fiance, and also a good friend of mine, love you guys, thinking of you. And Trez, I miss you, pal. And you were one of a kind. And I am very lucky that I got to have you as a part of my life. For it should have been longer. But I'm thankful for the time that I got to call you a friend. Love you, pal. Have a great rest of your day. We're back tomorrow. My name is Bill Ryder. The show is Ryder Than You. Hug the people you love. Be safe. Appreciate you as always. We'll see you tomorrow here on CBS Sports Radio.